been murdered. Other friends have flown before. On the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. And the bird said nevermore.
You're listening to The Call Podcast with Brandon and Josh.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to a brand new edition of The Call. It's a Baltimore Ravens podcast where we talk anything and everything Baltimore Ravens football. Thank you for listening, streaming, and downloading on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and the Baltimore Sports Report Network. Joining me, as always, we got my buddy Josh. What's going on, man?
Brandon, man, not much, man. Just enjoying another win in the Ravens books. It was ugly. The saying, man, it's never easy. It never is pretty. It sure was ugly, but it's us, man. It is truly Ravens football at its ugliest and its finest, man.
Absolutely. But before we even get into the game, I have to ask you this. I saw on Facebook you posted that a couple people were at the game and they actually asked for your picture. They wanted a picture with you. What were you doing that made these people want to get a picture with you?
What was I not doing?
I've been to games with you, so I know how rambunctious you get. So I can only imagine what you were either wearing or doing. I don't know. I have to know. What did they want that picture for?
Well, yeah, they want the picture. I think more people than ever are loving the football helmet I wear. Obviously, I wear the Ray Lewis helmet, and I have something new that I might wear for the season finale. I might break out, so it's pending, but for that time being, I'll put that to rest. I wore, obviously, my famous Ray Lewis black jersey and, wore my Ravens sweatpants. It was a little chilly out there for my camos. And then and I sported my usual Ray Lewis helmet. Well, for some reason, I was just walking around tailgating, and people more than ever were loving the helmet. Usually, I go to games. I mean, obviously, it makes a statement. And after you've seen pictures. But for this, I think this game, it was just people were out. Like, we went to... when we were at we met up with my buddy tailgating, and it so happened that we were just chilling around, and I was walking up, and he's like, "Look at this crazy guy," because he'd never seen the helmet. So, and you've seen the helmet, right, Brandon?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, so you know how I can get. And and then we're just sitting around there, we're eating shrimp on the skewers, we're having a great time, and I put the helmet down, and then everybody. So first off, I got the pictures with my contacts. You know, I wear the red contacts, so. Yeah. Everybody was like, "Your eyes are creeping me out," and I was having fun with that. And then this one buddy's wife was like, "I want a picture of those eyes." So she puts her cell phone like right in my face, and I'm all wide-eyed, and she got the eyes. She's like, "That's so cool." And then we took pictures, one without the helmet on so she could get the glow of the eyes. And then I put one with the helmet on, so she was loving that. And then as I was walking in the stadium, I had a guy. We were walking in the stadium. He's like, "Bro, you mind if I pose a picture with you?" I was like, "Nah, no problem." So I got a selfie with another girl, and then this guy wanted in too, so he got in. And then we're walking out, and as we're walking out near the player entrance on the ground level, walking out stadium, we walked across the street, and a guy approached me. He goes, "Hey, bro, that's an awesome get up, man. Can I snap a picture with you, man?" And then it so happened that because I wear the Ravens the Vapor Jet, the new gloves they have. You know how you put the hands together and right. It creates the bird. Well, he had them too. So the picture was I went ahead and I snapped the picture and we both put our hands up. Now, I gave him the info for the show and told him to post it on our website page. So if it shows up, great. If it's not, hey, at least I got the word out there to call. But I told him to go look up the Call podcast on Facebook and post the picture on there because obviously it was taken with his phone. I didn't have my phone on me, but going into the game. But with that being said, it was a great time. But it just felt like I was more like a celebrity. And even I took a new friend of mine, and she was enjoying it. She's just like, "I can see why you go out for the games and see why you do what you do." And I'm like, "This is what I do. I mean, I love my Ravens, and I just it kind of goes along with my dream. Like, I would love to be, one of those well-known fans, being in the Hall of Fame, where I'm notorious for that. It's just one of those personal things I like to do. But, man, it's not only for that. It's not for my personal gain, but I put on for my Ravens, put on for my city. I love what I do day in and day out. These guys, they play 8 times a year at home in Baltimore, and I put on every time I'm here. And then if I'm on a away game, do the same thing. And that's what it was about, man. It was about just everybody just enjoying the atmosphere and really appreciating my passion and what I bring.
Awesome, man. So that was real cool. Yeah, I think you might be one of those fans. You might be the new Captain Defense when he retires, but we'll see. So let's get into this game, a game that we both were talking about, how we didn't really think the Ravens were going to struggle against this team. They're 2-11. I got to say, like you said, it wasn't pretty. I feel as if this team was looking forward to Houston more than they were up against Jacksonville. I think this is the case of not taking a team seriously and then kind of getting caught and having a close race, but luckily the Ravens were able to come out with a win. But what was it about this week, do you think, that that made these guys play kind of to the Jacksonville level?
Exactly, they played down to their opponents. You know, being at halftime, well, I wasn't even halftime. I can't remember the point of the game it happened, because this was one instance where I, and again, you know, I'm not getting too graphic, but I never get up and go to the restroom. But nature had its calling, and I said, okay. You know, I think it was the thing where they just scored a field goal, and I think it was one of the things where Jacksonville just scored a field goal and they were kicking off. So, okay, I'm going to use this as a restroom break. Well, I'm in the restroom, and this is the point of the game where they got the onside kick, okay? So I didn't even get to see it. And I heard it of the radio feed in the bathrooms, and they go on onside kick, and I hear Sandusky go, Jacksonville had recovered the football, first down Jacksonville. I'm like, really? And everybody was whining about how the Ravens play down to their opponent all the time. And that was kind of the discussion, you know, being among some fans, you know, waiting for the restroom lines. And, you know, that's how it is, you know. They got up big for the Saints in Monday Night Football, and they showed up to play, and they made some big plays there. And, you know, Jacksonville comes home, and, you know, and they lay an egg, you know, or they could have, you know, and they did it. They let it up against the Chargers a few weeks back. So it goes without saying, the Ravens have been notorious through their whole – you know, their whole tenure here in Baltimore to play down to their opponents. They play up for the big ones, play down to their opponents, and sometimes it can get ugly. And this was one of the cases where they let them hang around, and I said the whole game, I kept not preaching negativity, man, but it was one of those games where you're watching, it's like, we're going to lose this game. Like, you had that feeling like it's going to be a loss, and we're going to sit here and going, come Monday morning and come recording the call, we're going to be like, really? Coulda, shoulda, woulda. That was a season. And I actually ate my words a little bit. But you know how with the Chargers game and everything else going on with what they didn't execute. When they were down in time of the day and it only came away with 3 points and it put them 10 on the board, I literally said in my seat, Brandon, I said, mark my words, at 4 minutes, 11 seconds in the first quarter, the Ravens will lose this game because of that field goal. And my friend turned to me and goes, way to be positive. I said, oh, I'm positive, but I've seen this 2 weeks ago. And I said, I'm fed up with it. When you're inside the 5, inside the 10, or anywhere striking distance within that end zone, you got to put it in. I mean, if this is against New England in the playoffs, we're going to lose that football game 10 out of 10 times. You got to put it in the end zone. Those 4 points are crucial. And points are just like – points are, to me, is valuable as anything. They're valuable as gaining yards. They're more valuable than anything, because if you're not getting those points on the board, you're going to lose the game, obviously. I mean, the Ravens shown – that they can lose football games with being outgained in the statistical category. I mean, the Saints outgained them on total yardage, I believe, on Monday Night Football, but the Ravens had to pick six is the difference. So it's they made the plays, they made the stops, and this game was too close for comfort, man. I mean, I granted the defense 4 field goals and kept them out of the end zone. That's great, man. We kept them out of the end zone, and the Ravens have been great. Our run defense, again, our 24th straight football game, without having a 100-yard rusher. Toby Gerhardt was giving us problems. I have to commend him, man. And I've seen some great things, also seen some not some great things. And obviously, you saw it on TV. I always like to get your perspective being a home game. What did you see that I probably didn't see, being that I was live? Did you see any different perspectives or anything out there that was eye-catching?
Well, I think the big thing was that that challenge that John Harbaugh threw out there and lost about whether it was a completed pass and then an interception, you know, a forced fumble, or if it was an incomplete pass. When they showed it, you know, before John Harbaugh was able to throw that flag, it was very evident that that the Jacksonville had an incomplete pass there. The ball was kind of in between two players, and the guy never had control of the ball. So that's what I really saw. Being at home and not in the stadium, because it seemed like after the refs came back and said, you know, what happened on the field is correct. A lot of people in the stadium got really upset, but pretty much it was the right call.
It was. I mean, that's what they said. And then speaking of calls, and I even asked my dad when I got home that night about the fumble and about the USAC fumble where, you know, obviously in the stadium they showed it. Looked like he was down, then the ball came out. It could have went either way. It's what they're saying, but my dad said that with the – they asked the ref, that Mike Carey, the former ref expert, and, you know, he used to be a referee for some years in the NFL, and they asked his opinion. It should have been a fumble. It should have been returned. And when he said the play stands as a fumble, I was shocked. I thought it was going to be a return. I mean, the game was pretty much cleanly called other than that. I mean, it really didn't cost us the game. It could have. I'm not going to pin out one of those calls or any plays like that, but – now, again, it's showing that the NFL's got to get this under control, that if it's evident, it's evident. If we can see it on the screens in the stadium and at home, you guys got to get it right. I don't care if they've consulted the NFL executive office, whatever, New York, whatever they do, the official replay exec, they need to get it right. Because, again, you know, these calls can just come down to a possession. It can come down to a difference of 3 points. It can keep drives alive. And not only that, but what I've noticed, you know, getting away from the calls – is the offense just – I expected more. I mean, and I've heard this from some of the media members after the game, and even Jason LaConfora, he actually – he's one of the media members who actually praised Jacksonville's front seven. I was listening to someone he had to say today, and their front seven's pretty stout. I mean, they – Justin Forsett could not run.
No, not at all.
And they were locking these receivers down. I mean, Joe Flacco couldn't get any big plays going. When he did, either I think it's just it wasn't there. And I was pretty much frustrated as anybody. I know all the fans were frustrated. The offense was frustrated. I could see it. I've seen Joe Flacco throw his hands up both times. And I've noticed when he walked to the sidelines, there were some discussions over there. They were trying to get it right, but it just seemed like no matter what they were doing, just couldn't. They couldn't do it. But I have to commend this. As bad as the offense didn't execute, and you look at that, is it whether the offense didn't execute or was it Jacksonville's front seven was actually, yeah, they're 2-11, but are they as better as people anticipated? Again, I said this before when we previewed the game. They're all pros. 2-11, it doesn't matter. When I said walk into the stadium, I said, right now, these two teams are 0-0 in my eyes because – And what was scary is not only that, but with their front seven and with the onside kick and with the trickery and the fakeness and the fake punts and all, it's that fake punt was perfect execution. I mean, that was right on point. I have to commend them. I look at it this way. They had nothing to lose. That's what makes these teams scary. I almost rather play Denver or New England in the regular season right now. As weird as that sounds and as crazy as it sounds, man, I couldn't agree with that statement more because when you're playing these 2-11 teams or these teams that are out of it, they're going to do everything. They might not punt it all the time. They might go for it on fourth down and get the first down. They might, you know, kick a 54-yarder and make it. They just might do something crazy, and that was another thing. You know, not only that, but then when we couldn't execute, Justin Tucker missed 250-plus yards, and it was uncharacteristic. I know Justin Tucker's got a great leg, and when the other kicker's making a 54-yarder and our kicker can't make one in our own stadium, it was kind of like that frustrating point where it's like, all right, man, we got to get something going because we're letting them hang around. And at the commend it, man. They bent but didn't break, and we're going to start with praise on the defense, man. With Haluti Nada out, two straight games. But let me tell you this: the Ravens accumulated 14 sacks since his absence, man. I mean, they say he's a big part, but I mean, it'd be great to have him back in the playoffs. But right now, I think this defense is playing out of their minds without him.
Yeah, this defense is looking great, and the scary thing is that we still are having major injuries and problems with the secondary, but the defense, I mean, talk about Suggs and Doomerville. I mean, just those two guys alone are making this defense look like something that everybody should fear coming up.
Right. They combined for 28 sacks on the season. I think they're the highest duo in the NFL. If not, they're up in the top three or five. I mean, they're up there. They have combined between them 28 sacks. And they said the Ravens, I think they're fourth in the NFL in sacks, if I'm not mistaken. I think they have 45 sacks on the season. I think they're fourth or third in the whole NFL as a whole. They had eight. They had eight sacks on Sunday. Eight. And you have to credit not only that, but the Ravens getting after the opposing quarterback. But how about offensive line and blocking for Joe Flacco, man? I mean, I don't think Flacco was on his butt the whole game. Yeah. I can't remember.
Yeah, that was something I was very impressed with this past game. That's always been my big thing. I've been talking about this, you know, to you. I'm sure you're sick of hearing it just like everybody else is. I keep saying how the offensive line is not to my liking, that Joe Flacco is always on his butt and that he's not being able to do what Joe Flacco Flacco can do. But this game, they showed some little glimpses of brilliance here, because Joe Flacco, not only was he on his feet ready to throw the ball, but he was able to run too. When Forsett was having a lot of problems and they were not letting the Ravens get up the field at all, Joe Flacco took the ball and was able to get at least a first down. So
yes, that was a key play. If you remember, I think that was a third down play, and he scrambled because it was the drive that pretty much sealed the game. And it was important because that was the third down right around midfield, and he scrambled for the first down, and that was great. Calling that bootleg, I applaud QBI for calling that kind of play. I mean, using Joe Flacco's speed, yeah, he's not known for being a runner. Obviously, he's not a mobile quarterback, but the dude can run if he gets out. Remember in the game against the Dolphins, we were back in our own territory, and he had that 15-yard run for the first down to get us out and moving, and it led to a scoring drive. So it can happen, man. And we remember Joe Flacco's first unofficial touchdown. It was a run, not a throw. He ran down the sidelines against the Cincinnati Bengals in 2008's opener. Who can forget that? So we know what Joe Flacco can do. He can run the ball, and that's what makes him dangerous himself. Not to utilize that, but picking and choosing our spots, if we do one or two plays a game, I think it could bode well for us, especially when you're right, man. When the running game wasn't going and Forsett just wasn't getting it going and they were shutting it down. I expected him to have 100 and a touchdown. He just couldn't move. And then at the end of the game, it seemed like it was wearing on him because Pierce found some holes. He had some couple big runs. I think as the game went on, we wore him down. But for the most part, commend Jacksonville for doing a great job and really playing scrappy, man. It was a hard-fought playoff game in my eyes, man. They had to win. They have to keep winning. And with the scenarios at hand, it's just going to get that much harder, man, because end up being that Pittsburgh and Cincinnati both won. And it's just going to be that much harder. And the Browns just got obliterated in Manziel's debut. So, and turning our eyes from the game, with the two-run stretch, man, these playoff scenarios are coming along, man. I'm very excited to see what the next 2 weeks can bring. So, again, 2-11 team, it was more like a playoff game in my eyes. And I don't care how they get it done. I don't care if they were outgained in the turnovers, or outgained in the point of possession. You don't win style points for that. You win style points for wins. And wins get you in the playoffs. Wins get you a trophy. Wins get you just anything. Bottom line is a bottom line. And Ray Lewis always said, the bottom line is wins a win. We've always heard it, and I will quote the famous the character Toretto on Fast and Furious in the first one. Winning is winning, no matter if it's by an inch or a mile. And it doesn't matter. If we get – look in the case of the Chargers game, man. The Chargers beat us by 1 point. We had them virtually the whole game, except they made the last play that counted, and it put them ahead by 1 point, and it sealed the deal. Doesn't matter. again, I'm not looking for the offense to come out. You can keep the style points for your fantasy team and fantasy playoffs. Right now, I'm concerned with a ninth win, and that's what they got on Sunday. 9-5 record looks way better than 8-6 and out of the playoff picture. We're right in the driver's seat right now, man. I couldn't be more pleased.
And the crazy thing, this is a good segue, the crazy thing to think about is the fact that these guys are even considered to having a chance to make the playoffs, because earlier today, three more guys were added to the injury reserve. So the Ravens have now lost Lorenzo Talaferro,
yep,
Terrence Brooks, and now Asa Jackson, which we saw him go down in the game on Sunday. So that gives us a total of 16 Ravens on injury reserve. Now
That's insane.
Yeah, let me put it into perspective here. The Steelers, Browns, and Bengals combined have 17 players on injury reserve.
17 players.
That's for all three teams.
Wow.
So the Ravens have one less, and that's just the Ravens. 16 players on injury reserve. So it really shows a lot about what the Ravens can do, especially with this year, with their coaching staff, with all the changes they've gone through, with people being suspended, with people, not being able to play at the beginning of the year. To have 16 players on injury reserve and still be able to say, hey, we have a chance of making the playoffs is a huge coup for this team. Think about it. It's the way you always say, next man up, next man up. They have to be taking that mentality right now because they've got so many injuries and so many other things up against the Ravens. There's no other team, I want to say, in this league that, given 16 players on injury reserve, would be anywhere close to the playoffs.
And that brings up a good point, man. You're right. If looking on paper and all the injuries, you're like, there's no way. And I know history is history, but speaking of that, the Green Bay Packers in Super Bowl 40 had the same playoff run where they had all these injuries. I mean, Ryan I think at the time their running back was Ryan Grant. He went down. They had JerMichael Finley, their great tight end at the time, with an injury. They had all these injuries on offensive defense, and they beat the Steelers in the Super Bowl to win the Super Bowl. So, and they went on a playoff run, and they were the sixth seed in the playoffs, went all on the road. It can happen. And it's very impressive that a team that talks about depth, but it just shows you the other flip side of how deep the Ravens are, how great our front office is, and finding players to step in and fill the void. And that was that's the crying all over sports. It's, you know, how deep is your team? Because, yeah, your starting line can be great, but if one or two big players got me, obviously if your quarterback goes out, you're pretty much screwed. But when these role players come out and we're missing a loaded Nato, we're missing this, and I mean – and not even to get away from the football, but if you look at the Orioles and our other Baltimore Birds and what they did last year, I mean – they made it to the American League Championship Series. And remember, Machado was out for the remainder of the year. They had their all-star catcher, Matt Wieters, out. They had all these role players step up. And you heard about, you know, they brought Steve Pierce back, Kelly Johnson, who hit a game winner against the Yankees in the play and on the later part of the season. I mean, that's the kind of stuff you look at in sports. And then you flip it over to the Ravens. There was always next man up. From the year 2000, it was like that. And there was a book even written about it, Next Man Up. But John Feinstein, and that's the Ravens' mantra. It's next man up. Oh, it sucks. Look, Dennis Pitta for us this year went down again, and right now we're a 9-5 record going for a playoff run. I mean, who'd have thunk it? It's okay. Well, if Pitta's not there, Uma Daniels has been great. He caught a touchdown pass on Sunday. He actually missed a wide open catch. If it wasn't for that, he would have had a monster game and a super. How about Crockett Gilmore? I mean, these guys, you're like, who are these guys? But they're filling in. And they're filling in nicely, and with 16 people on IR, it's really, you know, this team's a playoff team, but that just shows you the as an opponent shows you how scary they can be. It's like, man, these guys keep hurting, they just keep winning, and they keep fighting. That's the Ravens, man. That's what makes me more excited. It sucks for these guys going down, you know, and not only that, but we lost Nada, we lost Jimmy Smith, we lost Dennis Pitta. These are big ticket names on our team that went down for us, man, and we're still getting it done. We're 4 games above 500 at a 9-5 record, getting it done. We got 2 games left. So, with that being said, I mean, sky's the limit, man. I'm pleased right now to see what they can do. And speaking of fill-ins, I mean, was it Rasheen Melvin and Jeremy Miles? Jeremy Miles, who we don't know, if anybody doesn't know, he actually intercepted the pass to seal the deal for Jacksonville's the attempted comeback there, if you will. And these guys are going to be stepping up. You're going to hear these names more often than not, being that our secondary stands it is. So these are going to be possibly your new Raven starters coming for the next few weeks and into the playoffs. So here it is, man. Next man up. And I can't wait to see how it all pans out. But it is a huge loss for us. I mean, Terrence Brooks, rookie, was having a great year for us. And then Asa Jackson, I always thought he was a great fit back in our secondary. And really can't wait to see what these guys can bring to the table and being back there in the corners and the safeties and solidifying their spots for years to come. Maybe whether it's not with here, maybe earning a bit to a good contract elsewhere. But for right now, I'm very pleased to see what they can bring. I'm excited. It's unfortunate with our injuries, but, you know, going off your point, being that we have 16 people in IR, how great is it that we just keep fighting, man? I'm very pleased right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great thing for this team to be able to say we have 16 players that, you know, some guys were on injury reserve or to replace other injured guys. And you know, we're 3-4 deep now into guys in certain positions. And it's crazy to think that, you know, the other three teams in the AFC North combined have one more guy than just the Ravens on injury reserve. So this is definitely not the team that was envisioned at the beginning of the year, but they're still getting the work done, which is a really great thing to think about. And that they're still, even for anyone to say, oh, the Ravens could win the AFC North and can make it to the playoffs with that many players that are subs or rookies, or that, I mean, that is a huge accomplishment for this team. I mean, I can't say enough about how impressive that has to be with all these guys that don't know the system very well or coming in late or on the practice squad and moving up. I mean, that's a huge coup. So real quick, before we jump into the next game, I want to bring up Asa Jackson, who is going to be on injury reserve. He's missing the rest of the season. I want to ask you, how big of a loss is it for the Ravens? Because this guy has been with the Ravens for a couple years now. He missed 3 games 2 seasons ago. He missed 6 last year. They were both due to suspensions. He missed, I believe, 4 this year due to injury. He comes back for 1 or 2 and then is missing the last 2 games. So is this guy, he's very talented, but can the Ravens, like, afford to keep him on this team after his contract runs out? Because it seems as if he's injury prone or he's problematic with suspensions. Can you count on a guy like Asa Jackson on this team?
I see him pretty much picking himself up. I mean, he was actually doing great. From what I know and from what I've observed, he was actually doing pretty well. He seemed like he cleaned up his act a little bit. He was anxious to play. I've seen some of his media handlings. I've seen the way he's talked. The way he's been fired up. You know, some of his tweets out there, he was ready to get after it. He was ready to be a part of the organization and really put his hands on, per se, and really get involved in defense and being involved. I know he was a special teamer for us, you know, trying to find a role where he fits. And I think he was going to be a great Raven. I know Ozzie Newsome. Obviously, we drafted him for a reason, and Ozzie Newsome has always been on his side supporting him, and I've always liked him. I've never had a bad rap for him or you know, ill will towards him. He hasn't done anything wrong in my eyes. I mean, yeah, he's had suspensions. He's has his problems, but I think he's put that behind him. For what I observe personally, in my opinion, I think he'll be a great fit once he remains healthy. It is a huge loss. Again, you know, echoing the next man up, you know, we're going to have to be. But for right now, it's going to be a big loss. And Asa Jackson was he was starting to come into his own this year, and I was very impressed for his third year.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens next season for Asa Jackson. I wish him all the best. That's the big thing for me, is that if you're looking at it as like a business kind of standpoint, can you count on a guy like that who's either in trouble or constantly injured? But like you said, I was really impressed with him this year, and I thought that he was really going to do a great job in the secondary. And it just sucks that these injuries are hitting him. But hopefully next year we'll see him back, and hopefully he'll be healthy. So. Anything else?
I agree, man.
Anything else we should talk about from this Jacksonville game before we jump onto Houston?
Nah, I think before we segue into the break, I'll just set a little teaser that I think previewing the Jacksonville, we're going to set up the table for the next 2 weeks and how the scenarios could go. We'll break down the AFC North scenario, see how the division winners can look out, because this thing's not going to be settled it's not going to be settled until the next 2 weeks. So we're going to have some fun with that. We're going to get into the playoff scenarios and how Ravens can clinch a playoff spot in week 16 coming up in Houston. So we're going to go through scenarios and really break down the Houston matchup, because they have some unfortunate news that happened to their team this past week. And so we'll cover, because they have some injuries themselves, that they have some IR issues. And we'll cover that and break down the matchup. So we'll get right to it.
All right, very cool, man. So before we start talking about the Houston Texans, here's a quick word from the Baltimore Sports Report Network.
The Call is a member of the Baltimore Sports Report Network. Find more podcasts like this at BaltimoreSportsReport.com.
Hey there, Baltimore Ravens fans. If you're like me, you love the Ravens, but you also are a huge supporter of the Washington Capitals. If you're a football fan or a hockey fan, if you want to get ready for the Winter Classic this year, check out my other podcast, What the Puck. It is available for free on iTunes, Stitcher, the Baltimore Sports Report Network, and TuneIn Radio. Myself and Coach Dan Hayden, we discuss the Washington Capitals, the Hershey Bears, and the South Carolina Stingrays weekly, going over games, stats, and more. So check it out, The Call and What the Puck, both available for free on iTunes, Stitcher, the Baltimore Sports Report Network, and TuneIn Radio. Call. Here we go again. Here we are. We're going to talk about the Baltimore Ravens versus the Houston Texans coming up this Sunday. The Houston Texans, they are a big, powerful team, but they are missing one of their biggest proponents of the team, the quarterback. But it's not even going to be the second string guy or even the third string at this point. They are going all the way down to their fourth choice for quarterback. Do you have any information about this guy that is kind of coming out of the woodwork for these guys?
Well, his name's Thad Lewis, and I know another name's been thrown out there was Casey Keenum. He used to quarterback for him a couple years back, and they're really reaching, man, and it just shows you, again, we not only our issues with our depth, but how about that? And it shows you with the quarterback position, if the quarterback goes down, it's pretty tough to overcome that, speaking of injuries. And the Texans have their own. They're trying to salvage what's left of their season. I know they're out of the playoff picture. Bill O'Brien's over there coaching a great team. They have some great role players. I mean, Andre Johnson's still a threat. He's still relatively healthy from what I know. You know, the injury bug has bitten him as well as Arian Foster. They've had some backup issues there. With the quarterback position is really where their glaring weakness is, and I think what it bodes well for us. We know what they're capable of on defense. J.J. Watt's an MVP candidate. He's a force to be reckoned with. I'm worried about the defense and seeing because, you know, this is going to be our matchup because we're going to see where the money's going to be made on Sunday because we talk about how great our line is and protecting Flacco. We know how great J.J. Watt is on the other side of football. Let's see the two collide on Sunday and see how well because that's going to be the battle to watch. And if Flacco can stay upright and find his lanes to throw in, it could be a great day for us. But, yeah, you're right, man. Fitzpatrick went out with a broken leg. That's kind of unfortunate, man. You hate to see an injury like that. It's pretty gruesome. I wish him a full recovery. And again, you know, you never want anybody to go down. But with that injury, who knows? It's a blessing because it's like a perfect time because the Ravens, with their defense playing on a high level right now, and any opposing offensive coordinator and head coach trying to scheme with that, it's going to be tough, man. Because you're figuring the Ravens has 8 sacks on rookie Blake Bortles this past Sunday at home. They got to go to Houston, and they're going to go and play a rookie quarterback in Thet Lewis. I mean, if that's the case, God help them. I mean, that they're going to be in for it. I mean, Dumervil's coming in, Suggs coming in, Timmy Journey, everybody's coming in, man, and they're going to be after him. So I think the Ravens are going to – this is what it's going to be in the trenches again. It always comes down to the trenches. That's how we play games, man. It's going to be, number one, can the pass rush get to the Texans quarterback, whoever's going to be under center, and two – can the Ravens uphold the Texans' pass rush and J.J. Watt and company? And we know Jadeveon Clowney is not going to be playing. He's been put on IR, their number one draft pick. So they've have issues. So we're going to see where the rubber meets the road and see how this all plays out for the Ravens, man. It's going to be a fight, man. And now not even break down the matchups, but how about this before we get into that? How about the AFC North race, man? How is it that with 2 weeks left in the season, this thing isn't decided? And we knew this was going to happen.
Yeah, it is crazy to see this AFC North compared to a lot of the other divisions in the NFL. This is super tight. Anybody could come out on top at this point, and it's good to be a part of that. I'm happy that the Ravens are a part of that because they're the type of team that needs to have they need to be able to like bite and claw all their way to the top. That's the way that it was. If it was a cakewalk, I don't think the Ravens would do as well. But what a scenario or a couple scenarios that we're coming down to at this point.
We're coming down to a few, man, and I'll break them down for you. Obviously, our target's the win. We need to win first and foremost because a loss puts us down. Before we can get to the scenarios, I'm going to cover records. Ravens went out. They finished 11-5. That is a guaranteed playoff spot, no matter how you look at it. The Ravens win their final two games. They're in, locked in, at least with the 6th seed for the time being. So they're locked in. With that being said, 1-1, no worse. Obviously, if they lose both games, it could happen. It is the NFL. If they lose both games, obviously, they're out of playoffs for good. They lose, it would dampen their chances pretty well, especially if the other teams win. Then you got a scoreboard to watch. So pretty much, first and foremost, take care of your own business. Go beat Houston on the road. It all sets itself up for a Week 17 matchup with Cleveland because we play Houston at home or Houston away, Cleveland home. And with that, it's the easiest schedule. The Bengals, we'll cover schedules. The Bengals have the Denver Broncos on next Monday night. Yes, Denver clinched their division, so did New England, but Denver, I think, is a game behind or half a game behind the New England Patriots from number one overall seed. So, obviously, Denver doesn't want that to happen. They're going to have to play their A game with Peyton Manning and everybody else. They play the Broncos. Kansas City Chiefs come to Pittsburgh on Sunday. They're looking to improve their position with plus, but they're 8-6 right now. So, obviously, the Ravens lose and the Chiefs win. That could bode well for them. So, a lot of scenarios can happen, but here's how the Ravens can get a playoff spot. Ravens can clinch a playoff spot with a win, coupled with a Steelers loss or a San Diego loss. There's a lot of scenarios. Obviously, we need to root for the Bengals to lose, Kansas City to lose, Kansas City needs to win, even though it's confusing, it can be, because we need Kansas City to lose somehow. But in order for us to look at the division, here's how we can win a division title. Simple. This is the simplest formula I can tell you. Ravens win out, and Bengals lose once, and Steelers lose once. That's it. That Ravens will be the AFC North champs. The only way that cannot happen is if the Bengals and Steelers both win this weekend. Obviously, we won't know till Monday night. So, obviously, if we know the Ravens and Steelers win on Sunday, we'll be hard rooting for the Broncos on Monday night to keep it alive. Because if the Bengals and Steelers both win, and we win, it's a moot point because we can't catch them because they both play each other in the final game of the regular season. So that means if that happens, Pittsburgh and Cincinnati play for the division title the last week of the season, we'd be playing for a playoff spot. Okay, with that being said, the Ravens pretty much lose. They'll knock themselves out. The Ravens can win with a couple of scenarios, and that concludes the playoff spot. If San Diego loses, whatever happens with the Pittsburgh-Kansas City game, there's some scenarios there. So that's how pretty much the Ravens can get in and punch their ticket. Or if not, it's going to be against the Browns at home in the season finale, the home finale, and that would be great for me. The scenario, I'm going to ask you what you would like to have. I would like to see a division win. Nothing sweeter than a divisional title, a home playoff game, especially when you get to go to the playoff game. I would hate to be on the road, especially if the playoffs ended today. I think that they said we would go to Pittsburgh right now, which that would suck in the first round of the wild card game. I think if we ended up the sixth seed, we would play Indianapolis. I would love to go to Indianapolis. We had them in the regular season. We could have won that game. Indianapolis isn't, in my eyes, a team that impresses me anyway. But we're not going to get that far in depth with the matchups. But, you know, the scenario I would like to see is the Ravens win a division. I'd like to see Pittsburgh. I'd like to see Cincinnati. Here's what I like to see. I like to see Cincinnati lose. I think Pittsburgh will beat the Chiefs on Sunday. And then I like to see the Bengals beat the Steelers in the last game of the season, because that would mean that the Bengals already lost one, then the Steelers would lose in week 17. We went out, we're division champs. So it can all play out, man. It's a little crazy. It's a little confusing. I don't know how it gets done, these scenarios, man. And it's great football. But just, again, the Ravens have the simplest control on it. Just control your own and let it all come into place. If you win the final two, you're in. So essentially right now, every game's a playoff game. If they can win every game without holding out and get everybody back for the playoffs, full steam ahead. And already they've already solidified themselves a non-losing season by winning last week. They already have now. They'll be above 500. They're guaranteed that. Whether it's 9-7, 10-6, or 11-5, 11-5 is the goal. They can't finish any better than that. It would be great. 11 wins gets us in the playoffs for sure. So, again, it starts in Houston. And getting to this matchup, it seems easy on paper. The Ravens do open as 5-point favorites on the road. I think they're going to get it done, and get it done they shall. But there are some matchups problems in the way. Starting with Andre Johnson, before we get into that, I want to ask you, man, before we get into the matchup, Brandon, what playoff scenarios would you like to see? And I pretty much already think it's a given. I think you like us as division champs too. And then what are you concerned about heading into the game this Sunday?
Well, of course I want the Ravens to win the division. I'd be happy with them getting into the playoffs no matter what. But, of course, having a division title would be even sweeter, especially like we talked about earlier in the show, just with all the injuries and everything going on for this team to come back and be able to win in the division. How do you stop a team after they get through all of that, all that crap they had to go through the regular season to then win the division? What a story that is right there. So I would be up for that. But going up against Houston, the biggest thing for me, I am terrified, because I'm a huge fan of this guy, but I am terrified of J.J. Watt. I think that he is, like you said, he's going for the MVP. He's an amazing player. Talent. Can't get over how talented this guy is. He takes his job very well. He's got one of the coolest names in the world. I mean, he sounds like a pro wrestler. I expect him to, you know, team up with like Brock Lesnar or something, the way that, you know, J.J. Watt is such a great, you expect him to come down a ramp with Pyro and everything on Monday Night Raw. But I let me ask you this. I'm worried about J.J. Watt and what he's going to do to this team. What do the Ravens have to do to make sure that J.J. Watt isn't a huge factor on Sunday?
Well, first and foremost, they're going to have to scheme. They're going to have to, you know, key on blocks and double team. Double team, yes, it leaves other people vulnerable, but they're going to have to, you know, maybe run away from inside. If they're going to use the running game effectively, run away from inside. Wherever side he's not on, run away from that. If you're going to run to him, you better put 2-3 hats on him, or he's going to be disruptive and shut down Forsett. He's going to be disruptive in getting back to get Flacco. With that being said, I really hope to see a lot of shotgun formations so you can keep an eye on them. Because if we're under center, by the time Flacco gets back there and look at his progressions, Watt could be back wrecking his havoc as usual. And it's the equivalent to – it's pretty much like this. It's like taking Durbinville and Suggs and putting it into one guy. That's how impressive this dude is. So he does pretty much what Suggs and Durbinville do, plus some. I mean, the dude catches touchdowns too. I mean, believe it or not, I think he's got 2 or 3 this year. Which is more than most some of the tight ends and receivers out there in the league. So I think I think he's got at least 2. So with that being said, he's dangerous. He's an MVP all around. Again, he is a great personality. If you see him off the field, I love the way the dude his work ethic is bar none. I mean, he impressed me with that, and you know, and I know he's a big community guy. I know how he handles the public and being with the kids, and I know how he handles that. I heard this week some 7-year-old football player sent him his autographed jersey. So he's just an all around great guy, great player, great advocate for the NFL. Wish he was on the Ravens, honestly. I mean, I know the paycheck would have been gaudy. There's no way we can get him, but it's entertaining to watch him. And thankfully, he's not in our division, so we don't have to see him twice a year. We only see him a few times of that. I think we played the Texans once every year, or once every other year. It seems like we play him every other year. We've met him in the playoffs before. Yeah, J.J. Watt's going to be the matchup. And what other scary matchup it's going to be is Andre Johnson, because we've been done impressive shutting down a running game. I'm not saying Arian Foster is not scary. But we, again, if we go to the 25th straight game without allowing a 100-yard rusher, I'll be impressed, especially with Arian Foster on the other side of football. And Andre Johnson, it creates a scary matchup for our secondary because how thin we are and how big he is. And not only that, but DeAndre Hopkins, he's a fast, flashy receiver who's got great hands. These two receivers are going to give us problems. So I think if the Ravens want to prove, this could easily be a game that the Texans can steal from us if we're not careful. So I think, again, can't take this opponent lightly, because a loss puts us really in serious contention without the playoffs, especially if the other teams start winning and we lose. So again, this is going to be a game to watch. It's going to be a game to get off for. We're going to be wired up. It's going to be a playoff game. So in my eyes, and I think players understand that. Harbaugh even stressed that. You know, it was a great ugly win, and even in the locker room speech, but he knows they can do better. And I think all the Ravens know they can do better. I mean, if they play like that and can lose, yes, it's the Jacksonville Jaguars, but if they can lose, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, and like I said with the NFL, we say this all the time on the show. It's parity. It's the NFL any given team, any given week. I mean, the Jacksonville Jaguars beat the Cleveland Browns 26-6 this year. The Cleveland Browns they have a pretty good record. Yeah, they're 7-7. They've fallen off the wagon as of late, but they've actually started off, and they were in first place now a couple weeks ago. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers beat the Steelers. Steelers are 9-5 now. It can happen. So again, we've seen this before. We've seen the same old song and dance any team, any Sunday, any day, any Monday, any Thursday, any Saturday. I don't care what day it is, brother. So with that being said, it's going to be a big headache matchups wise on both sides of the ball, offense and defense. The big glaring thing is a quarterback. The offense is going to run through the quarterback. So whether it's Case Keenum or Thad Lewis, that's going to be a big, big problem, because for them, Fitzpatrick was having a monster year. I mean, at one game this year, he threw 6 touchdowns. The dude's awesome. He was having a great year for him. And with that big loss, I hate to see anybody go down, but it almost comes at a perfect time for Ravens and their defense, the way they're sacking quarterbacks right now, the way they're getting after it, the way they're stopping the run. It could spell trouble in Houston, what they want to do offensively. So these weapons might not be as effective, being who's distributing the football. So we're going to see come Sunday, man. It's going to be a great matchup. I think the Ravens will pull it out. I'm going to say I'm going to go 24-14 Ravens on this one, man.
Very, very nice. But let me ask you this before we wrap things up. How do the Ravens prepare for a quarterback like this? A guy who is a rookie you really can't study tape about a guy like this. How do you prepare for a game like this where there's really, like, it's kind of like they're going in blind?
They are. They're kind of going in blind. I think what happens is you stick true to you, mix it up with some schemes, different looks. Don't give them any predictability. And obviously, you got Suggs on one side, Doom on the other side. It spells doom and gloom for them. And just give them and play Raven football. Pedal to the metal, go after the quarterback. I think what they need to do this time is be more aggressive with the blitzing, be more aggressive with getting after them, make them throw. I would respect the team if they beat us or somehow get even close and we're rushing him, and he's making these throws. And it's like, okay, well, now we got to change it up. But I'd rather put on the pressure of Lewis or Keenum and say, you got to beat us, kid. You, whether it's the rookie or whether it's Keenum, you got to make them beat us. You can't really sit back and let them make these throws, because I'm telling you what, if they make one of these guys look like all-stars on Sunday, it's going to be a long day. You might hear me yelling from wherever I'm at, because I'm not going to be pleased. This defense is too good, and the way they're playing right now to let some – little Joe Schmo quarterback come in and do it. Granted, he's a quarterback in the NFL, and we're not. But with that being said, it's not Tom Brady. It's not Peyton Manning. It's not Aaron Rodgers over there and under center. So they need to take care of business and take care of it now, because you're going to play these guys in the playoffs. The best of the best make the playoffs. The best 16 teams make it, 8 in each conference. Or 6 in each conference, 12 teams. My apologies there. I'm a little getting ahead of myself. But with that being said, you're going to play these guys, whether it's Andrew Luck, whether it's Tom Brady, whether it's Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, you're going to play these guys somewhere along the line. So if you want to get after it, they got Bortles eight times. Who's to say they can get Keenum or Lewis 10 times? I say pedal to the metal, and that's how they should scheme for him. I mean, you're right. It is hard to prepare because they don't have the film. But, again, I'm not too concerned. I know they can get film somewhere. They'll get it. These guys have played somewhere along the lines, and they're going to study their tendencies. And with rookie quarterbacks, the Ravens have fared fairly well. And as you've seen it with Blake Bortles, he got sacked 8 times and kept them out of the end zone. Yeah, they started moving the ball, but the Ravens boded well, and they got stops where needed stops and kept the field goal kicker busy, which is in most cases what happens when we play rookie quarterbacks. And we might play another one in Week 17 with Johnny Manziel. So, obviously, Johnny Football comes into town, and that should be fun. And, again, I've seen it before. I mean, the Ravens have played rookie quarterbacks, and we've taken care of business. So, and I don't think – and I would have to mark my words on this one, but I'm fully confident saying that I do not think a rookie quarterback has not beat the Ravens. I do not think. And if not, I can't remember the last time it happened, whether it was 10 years ago, whether it was recently. I can't remember the last time a rookie quarterback faced any of our defenses and beat us. Maybe 2 or 3 year starters, but I don't think any rookie has. So I think we've done very well against rookies.
Yeah, and my big thing, like, I can't wait for if they're keeping Johnny Manziel in and the Ravens get to go against him that last week, that is just going to be one game I can't wait to see. But this week just kind of scares me because I keep going back to that one game. I think it was 2 seasons ago when it was the Ravens up against the Steelers, and the Steelers, Big Ben didn't play. It was like their third string quarterback, and he actually came
out. Charlie Batch beat us.
Yes, he came out and beat the Ravens, and I keep going back to that game when I'm thinking about a quarterback that hasn't played a lot or that we haven't seen a lot of tape of, because it's harder for these guys to prepare for people they don't know. So I'm hoping that within this game, I'm expecting this game to have a very shaky first quarter. And as the game progresses, I want to see this team change it up a bit and be able to adapt to the way that this quarterback plays, because I don't know what to expect from this guy. I don't know what his style is, and I don't know if he even knows what his own style is or if Houston even knows his own style. So I'm intrigued by that, but that also worries me because they can't study up on it. But hopefully the day of, you know, at least for maybe the second half, we'll see them kind of adapt to what this guy is bringing to the table. And I do think the Ravens will come out with a win. I just don't know what it's going to be like for that whole game. I feel as if within that first quarter, the Ravens might worry us just a little bit.
Absolutely, man. I really hope that's not the case. But you know how this team, they always like to put us on edge and tease us a bit and start off slow, whether it's fast or slow. But and especially in, you know, I know we didn't really cover this, and speaking of starting slow and fast, I think now is the right time to talk about it. But you have to credit special teams. Who can forget that, well, one of the first plays, the biggest play of the game was a blocked punt, and Kamari King put it in for a touchdown. So, you know, that was great, and the special team stepped up. We haven't seen that, and that was the first blocked punt since 2003 when Ed Reed did it for a touchdown. So it can happen, and that was pretty impressive. I like to see that, and again, that was a difference in the game because obviously we only had one offensive touchdown and a couple missed field goals there. I think like to see Justin Tucker get back on track, and all three phases of the football kind of did well. Other than the Ravens' offense didn't perform points wise, able to points aboard and execute in a red zone again, or to convert a couple field goals. But I think you know, with the aggressiveness, I think they need to be more aggressive. And again, it's a playoff game. You know, it's kind of like win. You know, it's not win or go home mentality, but you might as well be, because a loss would put us really in serious doubt and contention because the AFC is so thin, and one loss could pretty much make or break you. So right now, win the next 2 games, you're in, and then, yeah, you win out, your Super Bowl chance. I mean, the Ravens did in 2000, and this is not 2000. It's not the 2000 defense, 2000 team, but the Ravens won. They went 5-4 start, won 7 straight, then won 4 straight to win the Super Bowl 35. So, again, teams get hot. The Packers did it. The Packers, I think, for the whole month of November or December was like that, were one and done, and they went 2, 3, 4 games in a row, I think, in the regular season, and then they went on to win all the playoff games and route to Super Bowl 40, and then that was with the injury prone. So Packers at that point. So, again, guys, it can happen. You can't have those doubts. You just got to believe in the best 53 players on the roster, best 11 on offense, best 11 on defense, and best special teams out there. And let's get it done, man. It's got to go for a win in Houston to put us at 10-5, and that's the goal right now.
Absolutely. So, with that being said, did we miss anything?
Not a chance, sir. Not a chance.
All right. Very cool. So, of course, this is the end of the call at this point. Thank you guys for listening so much. If you want to continue the conversation, you know Josh and I are always available. You can tweet to us. Tweet to me at BrandoCash. And, Josh, where can people tweet to you at?
They can always tweet to me at ItalianGQ52.
Very cool. So, of course, everybody go over to Facebook, like us over there, facebook.com/thecallpodcast. If you want more information about this podcast or any other podcast, go to brandocash.com and facebook.com/brandocash. Like us over there. You get information about this show. Whenever it comes out, you will be the first to know via our Facebook page. Like I said at the beginning of the show, we are downloadable, streamable. If you just want to listen to us, that's fine too. We are available on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, the Baltimore Sports Report Network. If you want to listen to old shows, archive show, go to thecall.brandocash.com. Now, we do the show completely for free. It is right before Christmas, guys. We aren't asking you guys to spend any big money on us. You don't have to go to the post office, stand in line, mail us something. All you got to do is go onto social media and let people know about The Call, okay? So tell people on Facebook and Twitter and Tumblr and Pinterest and Instagram and Vine and Reddit, anywhere you are social on the web. Let people know I'm a Baltimore Ravens fan. I listen to The Call and you should too. So that is pretty much it for The Call this week. The Ravens up against the Texans this weekend. Josh, get us ready. Take us out the way you always do.
Thanks, Brandon. I appreciate that. With that being said, 10-5 is the record. We all know what's at stake here. It's win or pretty much go home, as I said a few minutes earlier, and I can't wait to get after it, man. Ladies and gentlemen, here it is. The semi-season finale of the Baltimore Ravens, the away finale, I should say, and it doesn't come easy. We got some matchup problems, and it could bode good for us. It could bode well for us. We know we played ugly. We played sloppy. Think we'll clean up our act a little bit on the road, and I can't wait to get after it. Houston, Texas, J.J. Watt and company. It's going to be a great, great game. We know we got doom and gloom on our defensive side of the football. They got Watt. We got Flacco. They got... I still don't know who they're putting on the center, but God help them, because we have 28 sacks coming their way with doom and gloom and the Ravens. 45 on the total, 8 this weekend. Hey, I think it's going to be a sack fest. Hopefully not with Flacco, but hey, J.J. White might get one or two. Yeah, I think it'll be all right because we know he's a super talent. But again, we're looking to get after him. We're looking to move forward to the playoffs. We need to win out. It all starts Sunday in Houston. Playoffs are on the bound, and we need to corral these Texans. So let's fly high this Sunday and root for a playoff run. Let's go.
This has been a production of Brando Cash Entertainment. Music by Brad Lepore and Daniel Kelly from the DBK Studio. For more information, go to BrandoCash.com.